So we're recording now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, hey, everybody. No, we're good to go. Keep recording.
Finally worked.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Keeping It 1492. Today, I'm joined by Kyle, who's normally to my left, but we have a new person sitting to my left this week. His name is Chad Jr.
I can go by Chad. You're fine.
He's actually replacing Tom for the whole thing. Tom just doesn't know yet. I'm going to steal his chair. We're going to steal his basement. Eventually, we might move up and take over his room, too, and just have that as our extra little special room.
A little snuggle pod.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of exciting stuff going on this week. We've had a crazy hurricane going on.
Not here.
In Texas.
Hurricane Hunky Harvey.
I remember that. He was in Magic Mike, right?
I didn't see that.
No, he wasn't. I was just going
to work. Little thing. Magic Mike, they all wore fake penises.
Did you see Magic Mike?
No, but I saw them on like Conan or something, and they were all talking about how they wore like prosthetic penises on their real penises, so their penises looked bigger.
Lies. Maybe that was the magic. Movie magic.
Well, you know,
I saw both of them, and I didn't see one Patronus spell.
There you go. You could do a Harry Potter Magic Mike crossover.
Where all their wands are just dildos?
Well, their wands are in their pants.
Oh.
Harry, what are you doing? Hermione, you shut your mouth.
Have you seen From Dusk Till Dawn?
Yeah.
Remember Sex Machine, who has the pistol for his private?
Yeah.
It's like their wands.
So, Kyle, how's your week, Ben? Besides Magic Mike?
It's been all right. Just kind of, going by fast and starting school again soon. That kind of sucks, but it's also kind of good in a way, too.
Yeah, they technically label this as the end of summer, but the end of summer is not for another 3 weeks.
Yes, I like to look at this as like a satanic worshiper would, and it's like you gotta have your equinoxes right, and America just doesn't. We think summer just ends when September starts, but we got another like 22 days
until we finally murder that virgin, sacrifice her to our Lord.
So, Chad Jr., Chap, how's your week been? Any exciting things you can bring to the podcast to chat about?
Not really. Working, chilling and killing. It's a lifestyle.
And grilling, cooking a lot of food.
Yeah, I made burgers today.
What kind of burgers?
They had jalapeno and cheddar in them.
Oh, did you do that on your own?
Yes.
You see how Wegmans, which is kind of a Rochester idea, but it's slowly spreading down south, if you will, but they sell those like burgers, like they have like jalapeno cheddar bacon burgers.
Yeah, they're pre-made, but they're like way more expensive.
Super expensive, but they're always good.
I can just buy the ground beef and a jalapeno.
Right, and for the same price as those.
It's funny how Wegmans brand things have become like just as good as a name brand thing in like almost all levels of the things they come out with.
Wegmans is amazing in that way.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to give us money for like a 30-minute commercial, Wegmans, go ahead.
I don't think they would.
Yeah. We'd give you such a good commercial.
Yeah, and then we could all have dinner on Danny.
Right on his Lamborghini hood.
Do you think he owns a Lamborghini?
My brother claims that he did. He met Danny Wegman once when he worked at Brockport Wegmans, and apparently he like pulled up in a Lambo.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Really? Because
yeah, my friend Cheryl, who I used to work with at Burt Checks, so she was the manager in Chi-Li, and she said like she went and helped out with an opening, and he like rolled up in a Lambo, and like him and his like hot wife.
I would have thought he was more classy, like a Mercedes or Beamer type of man.
Yeah, he's still. Yeah. I remember the early 90s commercials with him. He would wear like a Native American, like very flamboyant vest. And he'd be like walking through a cornfield like, Wegmans, we support local farmers, you know.
Trying to just milk that that Iroquois crowd trying to sell Wegmans to him. It's sickening.
Huge lobbying body.
Like, and by the way, Wegmans loves its quite an Oshawnee audience. As we do here at Keeping Up 1492, even though our name suggests Columbus imperialism, we love our Native American viewers and especially our Haydon Oshawnee audience.
And Wegmans now sells their own version of a peyote button, which is crazy.
Mm. Yeah, it's great.
It's good stuff.
Well, hey, this week, what we're going to be talking about, which I've been really like excited to talk about, but it's been a long time coming. It's another entertainment episode, but we're going to be talking about modern movies. Modern movies as they relate to kind of the blockbuster.
The store?
Yes.
You might remember Blockbuster when you had that weird laminated blue card and you would go and get video games on your mom's expense.
When I was your age, this was all Blockbuster.
A little aside, I heard that there are catacombs in Rochester, and a way to get to those catacombs is underneath the old Blockbuster, which is now a Pet Saver.
I go there. How the fuck do you get underneath there, though?
You know, when they were doing construction there, I was like this close to asking, and I'm holding my fingers very closely. I was like this close to going up to one of the construction guys and being like, is there like a trap door to the catacombs? Just imagine how crazy that guy
would get punched in the face.
That dude with glasses was hitting on me. He wanted to get my catacombs.
But like it's like this crazy Rochester lore going back to... We'll do like a whole episode on Rochester lore, but...
I'm sure people will be super pumped about that.
But, yeah, it's like goes back to like the Freemasons doing shady shit in the catacombs, and then like Kodak just like going to the catacombs, dumping chemicals into the springs that lead to the river that apparently are down there.
That's crazy.
We're like... Rochester, I mean, we're called the Paris of America, I think, is...
Young Seriously. Lion of the West.
Yes.
Why are we called the Paris of America?
Because Paris has catacombs, and so does Rochester, and...
I've never heard of this the first time.
I'm just making it up, that's why. But I'm starting it here, today, August 31st, Paris Rochester, of the West. We're the Paris of the West.
You just made that whole thing up.
The catacombs are real. I mean, like, okay. I don't know if they're really real, but like the rumor of them is real.
It's like a Goonies tale right there. We go searching for the
let's
catacombs.
Let's go find some fucking doubloons.
We should totally do that. Can I be Data? Is that the one? The Asian one?
It's a booby trap.
I'm obviously Chunk. Because I like food. My stomach most relates to Chuck's. I don't know who you would be. Mikey is the one like, down here we are something, up there we are nothing.
Should I turn my baseball cap backwards? Doesn't he rock that?
Josh Brolin was Mikey's older brother.
Oh, he said Josh Groban. I was like,
Samwise Gamgee from Lord of the Rings. He played he played.
You didn't know that?
The Goonies. I just looked it up recently.
And when they were actually making that movie, Corey Feldman was like the biggest star in that film.
Yeah.
And now it's funny because out of all of them, Josh Brolin has the biggest career right now.
It's funny
Corey Feldman's a fucking loser.
Crazy, crazy guy.
It's funny how Samwise Gamgee is like the total clutch of the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy. Like, you wouldn't get anywhere if there was no Sam. And he was also clutch in the Goonies. Like, yeah. He was the guy that's like... We can't forget about the pirate treasure. We gotta risk our lives and go after it.
You know who's where he's not clutching? That show The Strain. Betrays everybody, dies.
Really?
Yeah, huge dick.
Also, when he was going off of One-Eyed Willie's boat, which is a pirate, how he's like, no, leave his treasure, it's for him. And then the boat goes off into the fucking seas, and I'm thinking, where's the fucking Coast Guard? Where's the Navy to fucking get this boat? It's gonna sail maybe a few hundred yards and then they're gonna surround it. It's not like it's gonna float off into the distance. Someone's gonna find One-Eyed Willie's boat filled with treasure.
Technically, that would have to be a freshwater location, right? Because wood would decompose in salt water. So eventually the boat's going to hit another piece of
So, shore. Good point. So that mean the movie would be based around us, correct?
Like a lake.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So the Goonies happened around us. True story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Goonies ship was on the Genesee River.
Oddly enough, I call my penis one-eyed Willie now.
And whenever I pee, I call it the Genesee River because I drink so many Jennies that I'm basically just making a new river every.
And it's so acidic, it turns the color of my toilet brown.
So, on the note of the Genesee, I was looking up. Remember when you were a kid and they were like, the Nile River is the only river that flows north. And then the other day I was thinking, doesn't the Genesee flow north? So I looked that up. The Genesee also flows north. And then I looked up list of rivers that flow north, and there's like 100 of them.
That's
like,
why they call Rochester the Cairo of the West.
That and because of our pyramids. They're inside the catacombs.
And that dude on the corner named Sphinx who sells me my drugs.
Actually the fifth return of Horus. The Egyptian god.
All right. Hey, so
we should probably move back to our topic.
So this week, once again, we're going to be talking about modern movies.
Like the Goonies.
Which of the Goonies is fantastic. But so there's something, I guess we could relate it to, like the Goonies was a blockbuster of the 80s. Our modern blockbusters are definitely, I would say, there's still a lot of excitement going on, but it's taken almost a 180.
I mean, in our previous episode about the last time we talked about movies, we kind of looked at the 80s as this, like, golden age of movies, and now, what's the shit we're dealing with now?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't know.
So, I guess I'll kick it off. So, my thought was, modern movies are supposed to appeal to the masses. We're going through a situation now where you have a lot of streaming options. So you have like Netflix, you have Hulu. You don't need to go to the movies. So they need to bring people to the movies. I myself still enjoy going to the movies, but I feel they're trying right now to market to a younger audience. This younger audience that's going to see these films are fucking ADHD ridden kids. They need a lot of explosions and colors and not really a cohesive storyline. So it's really about, like, if you notice, like, the cuts with modern movies, like, literally, like, if you watch a Tarantino film, like, Tarantino is known for doing like 20-second, 30-second shots, like, to kind of just establish the scene. But like movies today, it's just like cut, 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 cut.
So I can kind of comment on that. So in like a little bit of the research that I was doing earlier, in 1930, the average shot was 12 seconds long. So we're looking at 1930 when film really replicates theaters still. And they're doing longer shots, showing you the scene, less, you know, action. It's more based in dialogue and your writing ability. And today we average about 2.5 seconds per shot. So that gives us films with like 3,000 shots in a film. And like you said ADHD, but I just believe it's natural human attention fluctuates. And so what they need to do is to keep us reorienting ourselves towards the film.
Doesn't it make that film more disposable though? Because you're really going, you're seeing it and you see it the second time and you may pick up things that you didn't catch the first time, but there's just so much going on. It's really, there's not so much going on with the script, but it's just the visuals. So like, there's so many movies coming out where it's just, they're becoming so disposable. There aren't ones that really linger around and become considered like masterpieces. I would say of like, I view like the 60s and 70s as like a film mecca.
Yeah. I feel like the visuals have taken like the front seat, and then the writing has taken a backseat to the visuals of the modern blockbuster film. It's like more about how much money you can spend to make these effect after effect look amazing, whereas the storyline is secondary. It doesn't really matter that much.
And honestly, that's one of my least favorite parts about modern movies. Like when they remastered Star Wars, I was so upset by that. Because I believed that it looked just as real the first time they shot it. And now it looks less real with all the computer graphics put mm-hmm. into it and the CGI. I think, like, we look at 2001 A Space Odyssey, Stanley Kubrick's film. It was so good that it created the rumor that Kubrick falsified the moon landing. It was so accurate, and there's not CGI in that.
But he did more with less, and his secrets went with him to the grave. He literally destroyed most of his props. Like, he didn't want people to know how he did things. But now, these movies, like, especially with their use of CGI, it looks so incredibly fake. Like, looking back, I remember one of the first movies I truly heard about, like, CGI was Jurassic Park, and then even going into, like, Forrest Gump when he goes back and he meets, was it JFK he met in the...
I think it was LBJ.
LBJ. It looked incredibly real.
Yeah.
And even Jurassic Park.
The CGI doesn't hold up. Not to bring up Star Wars again, but Phantom Menace, you go back and watch that, it's a crap
show. Well, the fucking speeders are just incredibly corny.
Excuse me, Jar Jar Banks is an American hero.
Fuck you.
And...
Misa, thank you, Kyle. There was nothing racist about Jar Jar.
He became a senator after his battle experience. He's the John McCain of Star Wars.
Who did Jar Jar have to give fellatio to? Was it Palpatine to get that position as a senator? Oh, Misa, I like your penis, Palpatine.
Jar Jar gives fellatio to whoever fellatio needs to be given to.
He's just that kind.
He's just that egalitarian-minded being.
So, these movies, though, are being cranked out millions of dollars. And if you look, like, you can go on... I always go on Box Office Mojo, which it'll show you... it'll give you a breakdown of how much the movie cost, how much it made, its rankings and stuff. And it's crazy to see, on average, films are like over, like, I would say 125, 150 are like the average for these movies that are coming out.
Million, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Guardians of the Galaxy, I think was maybe like 175 it cost. And then like Wonder Woman cost like 150. And like, if they're like, these movies are cranking out like maybe like 700-800 million, so that's considered a success for the studio. But like, once again, it's like, with longevity, are these movies really going to be remembered?
And this is something I've brought up to you in like our music discussions, but I also think like the ability for the mass production of movies affects our ability to have true lasting motion pictures. Right now, I can go on Netflix and search thousands probably of videos. I can go on Hulu and find another 3,000 movies. There's no way I can possibly watch them all. There's no way I can know which ones are better than others. I'm going to know the ones that are advertised better. And it is kind of understandable that we're not going to have another 2001 A Space Odyssey or another, I don't really like Forrest Gump, but like another Forrest Gump, because it's... The market's so flooded that even if you're putting something out, there's so many other options.
I was just going to say that kind of relates to a question I had for later. Is it a lack of original flicks out there, or is it just we're being overflooded by these high budget movies that get more advertising? So then any like artsy film that comes out, not even like artsy, but just like, you know, out of the box, like original writing, yeah, independent,
mm-hmm.
That will just get over flooded by like, oh, we spent like $1 billion on this movie. Aren't you going to see that instead? Yeah.
And I can go off of that. So with the movie industry today, not with independent films, really, they're based more so like a lot of the revenue comes from merchandise and advertising and stuff like that. So I was looking into the idea of merchandise in movies, and George Lucas with Empire Strikes Back, he took a pay cut for all the merchandise rights, and he ended up making like $12.8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever gave a deal like that again. And film companies started realizing that the more we advertise, the more merchandise that we can produce, the more money we can milk out of these people for this one film. So, like, if you look at any blockbuster film that's coming out, there's a plethora of merchandise. Like, Minions have fucking paper towels, for Christ's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is not necessary. Children don't use paper towels.
So it's more about the almighty dollar rather than the like artistic value of the movie. Like, so you were talking about, I don't know, I'm sorry if it was Kyle or Chap. You were talking about how there's more and more blockbusters, and like we're rarely seeing, I guess like during the Oscar season, you'll hear of these movies, like these, I guess, artistic films, but I do not think they are as, I don't know if this is me kind of being like, you know, whatever, but I just, they're very few and far between. It seems like even the artistic ones have a kind of a cookie cutter thing to them, you know?
Yeah. No, I can see that too. Yeah. It's like these artistic movies are not really stretching boundaries like the movies of the past have. They're still starring, like, you know, like Leonardo DiCaprio and stuff like that. It's not.
So, but could we qualify that from movie industry's movement away from like director oriented films to movie industry oriented films? So, like, what I'm suggesting is that, like, when we have in the 70s and the 60s, like, these directors had all the control. They didn't really have to listen to their Hollywood counterparts. But now, since it's such a huge revenue stream, they do. And so what we're losing is kind of like that novel, like, feature of film.
Well, Netflix actually just paid. So Martin Scorsese's probably number one on my, like, all-time directors. But Netflix paid $100 million for the rights to his most recent film. Nobody, like, that's what he was looking for to make, like, the film's called The Irishman, but it's got Pacino, Pesci, De Niro in it, and, like, all these freaking great stars. But Scorsese, who has, look at his fucking resume, how many good films he has, these companies weren't willing to give him the money because they knew it wasn't going to make anything. Like,
well, he'll hit $100 million.
It will. So, like, no, it'll maybe make $200, $250 million.
Well, it's on Netflix. Like,
now
it's
it is.
Only based on
the only reason why it's going to Netflix is because Netflix, where Paramount was saying you can have $45 million, Netflix said you can have $100 million to make this movie and we'll give you the rights. So it's still like, here's where it's going to pay off with Netflix. Scorsese has a big following. People love a lot of those actors, but it's also going to do the award run. But those films, even like a movie like Taxi Driver, Pulp Fiction, like, obviously you go back to merchandising, it's going to take years and years for them to recoup a lot of money they're looking, you know,
all those Taxi Driver t-shirts and bobbleheads.
And lunchboxes.
I
used to have a lunchbox with the gimp on it. Right.
And it had a little fucking hole in it.
Well, I could kind of piggyback off of that idea because I was kind of looking into, yeah, we have these, like, we have our fucking Michael Bay Transformers movies and all these things that are, like, taking in a lot of money. Like, Guillermo del Toro, who's a director I like, but he did Pacific Rim. Like, I didn't think that was anything special.
I just actually rewatched Hellboy and I enjoyed it a lot.
I did too.
Well done. Yeah.
That was good.
I was kind of thinking that really the future of our, like, beautifully story-oriented and plot-driven movies are going to be into our streaming services, television shows. And now I say that because, like, Netflix has Marco Polo. Is that either of you watch Marco Polo?
My dad got really into it. He was trying to get me to watch it.
He was like, Marco! And Kyle's like, Polo!
It's really good, and it's very much plot-driven. It's very much a story. It's a drama. It's thrilling. And even, like, Daredevil. So we look at Wonder Woman or Captain America, which sucks. But their Daredevil show is dark and gripping and slow. It's not 100% packed with action and musical montages.
I still...
That's actually a theme I've heard recently, is that you look at the difference between TV and movies, and it's like movies came out like 30, 40 years before the television kicked off. So then the golden age of film was like 30 years ago. So now television has caught up to film. So now we're in like this golden age where television is like TV shows are a lot more cinematic. They have like what movies 30 years ago had.
Yeah, well, at this point, most of these streaming services and some of the better channels like AMC, who produces a lot of like really well done shows like Walking Dead or Preacher, their quality is the same as film. Their budgets are near the same as film. And that, to me, is more... I hate going to the movie theater. You know what I mean? I wait for most movies to come out so I can just watch them at my house. Now I have the opportunity to watch a 12-hour movie in my house with great quality, and I can binge it if I want.
So what they're doing with the show is they're understanding that we get attached to these characters. So there are good stories where you can spend 5 or 6 years, you know, with 13 episode seasons getting to know these characters. For instance, like Breaking Bad. But I know you mentioned that we're still going to have the options with like Netflix to see these kind of art house pictures and stuff. But I do feel they're getting lost amongst the clutter. So there's so much out there. It's going to be, and most of this, you know, like, going to the movies, it was someone sees a good movie, it spread through word of mouth. And right now that's similar with Netflix, it's through word of mouth. But there's so much, you know, I hear a new show I need to be watching every day, every week, you know.
It brings us back to the, you know, the plethora of options. Is this what is happening? Are the good options just getting drowned out? Or are we truly seeing like a degradation in filmmaking?
At the same time, I think it's important to bring up, like, we have the ability to do things with our phones, like make videos on our phones that are, like, people in the 70s could do with, like, an expensive camera, what we can do on our phones now.
Kyle, you're talking about snuff films, man. That's not okay for the podcast.
They got cars that run on water, man.
The 70s, lots of bush.
No, I mean, but my point is that, like, there's an ability to, like, DIY great movies, but nobody's gonna watch them because they'd rather see something that, you know, you couldn't make yourself.
Yeah, I completely understand that. So I view myself as like a film buff, but I love the shittiest of shitties. So I love watching really bad movies. But I also think like modern films, like films that are going that are meant for the theaters, they're playing with off of like they think the audience isn't intelligent enough. Like if you go on Rotten Tomatoes like and just read some of those reviews, like they're just like, what are you fucking, like, why are you picking apart this is absolutely stupid. And most of the movies that are getting like these 80% and 90% are those cookie cutter movies
like Toy Story, who is number one in like 5 different genre categories on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hey, don't talk shit about Toy Story.
The first one was great. It
sucks.
I'm a real toy, damn it.
I'm a toy boy.
But most of them, like, I remember I saw the Avengers in the theaters. And, like, I'm a big comic book guy. So, I'm like, I saw the Avengers.
Which Avengers?
First one.
Okay.
I was like, went with an open mind. I was like, yeah. And then I left. I was, like, disappointed. I was like,
It's just like a smash 'em up explosion.
But then you like, you know, the critics are giving it like 93-94% on Rotten Tomatoes, and you're like, why?
Do you want to talk about comic book movies for a little bit? Because I actually had like a little thing about
I would like to go off of it.
So I feel like, you know, when we think of like the modern blockbuster movies, the superhero movies, and along with that are kind of like the nostalgia overload movies, like Transformers, Ninja Turtles. Just Ninja Turtles was a comic book in a way, but it's all in the same category to me. These like movies where they piggyback off of like everyone remembering, you know, what they were. So then they're making this like crazy over budget movie about it. But I remember Dr. Daly, who is like a film history guy at the college we all went to. He
amazing professor.
Amazing, yeah. And he brought up, weirdly enough, in my like Civil War class for some reason, I don't remember how he got to it, but he said, like, you know what, like, I like Tim Burton's Batman, the Michael Keaton Batman better than the Dark Knight Batman.
Me too, that's my favorite.
I think his reasoning was that you look at Dark Knight, and Batman's not Batman anymore. He's more like Iron Man. Like, he's got these tanks, he's got this, like, arsenal, where Batman is more about, like, yes, he's, like, the rich guy with all the toys, but he's supposed to be more like this, like, Sherlock Holmes type guy, you know?
Yeah, he's like called the world's greatest detective.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, the detective. And I feel like DC, I always like DC better than Marvel, and I think it was because of that sort of, like, deeper character stuff going on. And, look at, like, Batman the Animated Series. It took you into, like, a 1940s type of Batman. I feel like Tim Burton's Batman movies, they felt more like a comic book, whereas The Dark Knight is, like, we're just gonna, like, try to piggyback off of Marvel, and now, like, Batman's, like, Iron Man.
So The Dark Knight was before, like, the Marvel resurgence.
The Dark Knight was Hollywood's answer to Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin did so terribly, and they're like, why is this? And it's because it wasn't dark enough. And I feel like well, I can't remember the name all of a sudden. Dark Knight? I said Dark.
Yeah, Dark Knight.
Yep.
Dark Knight.
the Dark Knight is cinematically dark. It deals with really in-depth themes and, like, much... Like,
but I thought Tim Burton was pretty dark, too.
They don't. It was. It was. Even, like, Batman Returns was, I would say, darker than the first Batman.
It's still dark, but it's kind of campy in the same way.
No, that's, like...
But I feel like the campiness is part of the comic aspect. Yeah.
I kind of want to, like, go off of what you were saying. And I was a Marvel fan, but I still think DC's doing better job with their cinematic universe. I think Marvel is...
I would say what I do love about Marvel is X-Men, but that's a whole different thing.
That's Fox, actually. Well, still, so Marvel is kind of under the Disney wing now.
Yeah.
So Fox owns a few different rights. Like, they just sold Spider-Man back, or, like, they're getting money off of Spider-Man.
Sony owns Spider-Man.
Right, but... Oh, Sony does, but...
So... Right. Spider-Man for PS1, Sony.
All right. Great.
The best game ever for PS1. No,
it was fantastic. The best PlayStation game. I used to play the demo all the time.
Me too. I did. I love that.
Just the first level where you beat the rhino. It was great.
Yeah. The black cat showed up.
You remember when you just only played the demos? Like, you never actually got the game?
I got the game eventually.
Yeah, me too.
I played the Spyro demo like 500 times.
Yeah, it just ended like first level, yeah. And you're just like,
you would just swing around after a while because you didn't want to beat it because you just wanted to, like, experience the world.
I got all the gems in that level. I don't know what else to do.
All right, so going off of what you're saying, a lot of the people in film kind of recognize that perhaps especially with horror films, and I brought this up to you earlier, is that every generation gets the horror film they deserve. Now, if we look at that across, like, a cinematic universe, regardless if it's comic book heroes or dramas or thrillers, do you think a lot of our movies now are speaking to our generations, or, you know, the generation next, the younger millennials, I suppose, in a way that they're representing what they need to see? Like, when we look at old westerns, it's about upholding traditional values, moving away from norms. We look at the Cold War era. It's all about espionage and technology taking over, especially in the late 80s, like with The Fly and stuff like that. And now what we have are these really almost uplifting stories of freedom, you know, the hero winning out. Do you think they're trying to speak to a mindset we have, or is it just...
I mean, I think they absolutely are, but it's hard to pinpoint because we're in the muck right now. You know, it's kind of easier to look back and put labels on things than it is to, like, look at what you're in right now. And I think it is interesting how we are going to like the nostalgia realm a lot with the comic books, with Transformers, Ninja Turtles, and it's almost like supplanting like the like those were the good old days that are still great, and we're gonna live up to those rather than
they kind of give us though like an ideal world. Like yes, there are villains, but there are tangible heroes who will come out and fix the problems. And like, regardless if it was the Obama presidency or the Trump presidency, there was ISIS, there was terrorists, there was North Korea. Like, there's all these impending dooms, but especially now, we don't really have, like, a strong voice of a hero. And what these movies do give us is this fantasy of being, like, or having a hero. Or you could just look at it as like we were all told we could be whatever we want to be, and we all want to be superheroes.
Yeah, it's all interesting. I mean, if we want to take what was the third Batman movie with Bane?
Dark Knight Rises. I thought Schumacher's Batman.
When I saw Dark Knight Rises in theaters, I thought it was like a weird commentary on like Occupy Wall Street.
Hmm. I think it was actually, and
it was like the wrong one though. Dude, like I didn't want to hear what they had to say about it.
I love Batman. Everything to do with Batman, and I kid you not, I was disappointed for pretty much each movie of that trilogy. And this is where like you were talking about like Ninja Turtles, because you know how they just released the Ninja Turtles?
Yeah.
I'm still fond as fuck as the original of the original Ninja Turtles trilogy.
Okay. I was going to say, are you fond as fuck of that fourth one where they go to, like, ancient Japan in the future and there's a woman?
That's the third one. And that was a great one. Turtles in Time. Fantastic.
Turtles in Time.
I didn't even know that existed.
First two are good. Secret of the Ooze and Ninja Turtles.
Like,
that's it. That's where it ends for me.
So back in the day, they used to, like, combo, like, you could get the movie with, like, a pizza.
And,
like,
yeah, I remember.
So, like, they would, right, and
The Mikey special. But it was cool. Pizza on the skateboard.
I don't know if I like these movies are so revered in my mind because of the nostalgia factor. But like I'm with you in thinking like the first Batman, that's probably the one movie I've watched the most in my life is the first Batman. And the most recent trilogies I can give two shits about. And even like I just love comic books in general, but I hate how there's this kind of like this like North and South aspect of like fanboys now, like you either have to be DC or you have to be Marvel. I'm like, why can't you like them all? I remember going to see every fucking comic book movie that was released.
Yeah. And I still do. I love, right. Like, I just like, I've always loved comic books. My two favorite comic books, Green Lantern and X-Men. That's DC and Marvel. I grew up just kind of understanding that both of these are offering, like both options offer me what I'm looking for. And that's an escape.
I mean, as much as I painted the, you know, DC versus Marvel earlier, like, I still love them both. And I think, honestly, I painted that picture because I'm disappointed in the DC movies lately.
It's there, though. I think
Suicide Squad was terrible. I think Wonder Woman was too similar to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I didn't even like see Wonder Woman yet.
Wonder Woman was it's a good movie.
I didn't even see Superman vs. Batman.
So yet. You got start with BVS because that film's it got pandered, but I thought it was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
It was darker, and a lot of people were not expecting it to be.
It's not only darker, but it's really story driven. There's not a lot of action. It's a lot about creating the dynamic forces between these two characters, and this brings us right back to this idea of like what makes a good movie a good movie. Is it that it makes a lot of money, or is it entertains you? And you were saying nostalgia, but like a lot of these movies that you probably watched when you were younger, I didn't watch until I was an adult, and I still found them riveting. Mm-hmm. Like The Shining, I watched when I was 26 for the first time, and I thought that like was one of the best movies
I've ever seen. I remember telling you to watch that movie for a long time. You're like, I don't want to.
No, it was amazing.
So like there were a few lesser known comic movies that I've enjoyed so much as a kid. One was The Shadow with Alec Baldwin. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And The Phantom.
I love The Phantom.
And they were both, those are two Oh, and also, I guess it's not really under the comic lexicon, but Dark Man with Liam Neeson.
Yeah, when he like turns invisible.
Right, and he like makes the mask on his computer.
Yeah.
But those like, so those were great. They were all story driven, but I think everything started to change when what the movies that actually brought it back, like comics, like going, like making shit tons of money, was the X-Men franchise. Because it started in like 2000, I believe.
Yeah, but that franchise, like the only one that's good is the first one, and it's not.
Yeah, I actually like the newer X-Men better.
Yeah, Days of Future Past and Days of Future Past. Like, those are good, but like X-Men, the original film, pretty good. Second one, meh. Third one.
Third one, they were trying to do too
much. I thought Logan was alright.
Logan was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Logan, once again, more story driven. So
wasn't it rated R as well?
Logan, yeah. Logan, I liked, but it's like I'm sick of the Wolverine cult.
I'm glad that this was his last one. Yeah. I'm tired of them only giving solo movies to Wolverine.
But it's like, you know, have like a they gave him movie, what, you know,
four
anything.
Fucking movies to get it right. Like, this didn't work three other times. This one will work, and it finally did.
One comic book movie that I'm not on the bandwagon with is Deadpool.
Really, I really like Deadpool.
I thought it was good, but. Like, they're like, oh, Deadpool, he breaks the fourth wall, he can swear, and I just, the movie was just lackluster for all the options that they could have had, but that's just my opinion.
I thought the same, though, because I watched that, and there were funny scenes in it, but it seemed like there were too few characters, like, because they had... was it Colossus? Is that
well, he made fun of that too.
They won't release the other.
But they gave him like the use of two characters.
Well, that's where he broke the
fourth wall and made fun of that. Like, oh, they won't give me the budget. But I mean, I could see how you're right in that because it's like Deadpool intersects with the whole universe. And it's
why
like, you
even
don't
bring in any other characters? Like, why do we need Colossus or Negasonic Teenage?
Because I think they tried to just like bridge him for people who like weren't familiar. It's even though those characters aren't all that familiar to people.
You know, it's a cool Deadpool series that they could have done without any X-Men characters. Deadpool murders famous fictional characters. He goes into different fictional universes and kills the main character.
Well, you see, that's
the dude in Moby Dick or like Sherlock Holmes.
See, that would be awesome, and I feel like that's like the whole thing we're talking about here is that movies are fearful to make these big risks, creative risks that they used to. Like what if they came out with the Batman movie instead of like the newest Batman trilogy? They went for like, all right, let's do like 1940s Batman, you know,
The news of the week was Scorsese produced, Todd Phillips is going to be directing it, but a Joker origin story.
For Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Not a part of the DC.
And this is the, I think, an absolutely brilliant move that DC is doing. So instead of having films stick to the DC cinematic universe, they're having movies outside. So it's going to be a one and done type thing, which needs to happen. Because everything shouldn't be a franchise. But now you can have multiple people playing the Joker, multiple people playing Batman. So you're going to have more stories. It's going to have, you know, fans are, it's something to be excited about, but people are shitting on this idea. They're like, well, they're just, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Yes, it makes fucking sense. It's like a comic book. You have, you know, one story arc, you have another story arc. Yeah. That's what comics are about.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point because I feel like a lot of fans are looking for them to just
do the classic.
Just do a classic, release a movie that goes straight to the T of the comic, but it's like, really? You're going to be disappointed in that, so you might as well do something
totally different. Were you disappointed with The Watchmen? Because that goes straight.
Watchmen was fantastic.
Line for line,
I need to rewatch it. I watched it like while I was in high school, before I even read the book, so I read the book and thought it was friggin' amazing. So I need to see the movie again. But that's what I heard. It's T for T minus the pirate story, which they come out with a cartoon of anyway. So
yeah, I thought that was really good. And one, like with the original X-Men movie, one of my biggest griefs was that it didn't follow any story arc that remotely existed. And I remember bringing it up to a friend and just being like, none of this is how it exists in the comics. The comics are already so good, and they're good for a reason. Should we not follow them?
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of just retorted, like, you have to realize that in the comic, like, in comics, there's different universes. It's not always, like you said, the same story arc. So there's one way that the X-Men originated in, you know, the 93 version of Marvel Comics, and then there's another way in the uncanny 93 version of Marvel Comics.
Yeah, and DC even tries to, like, bridge that by saying, like, oh, like, there's other universes that our heroes have uncovered where things are different. Like, yeah. they try to explain it all with this, like, multiverse theory.
Yeah.
And, which is kind of neat. It's like, almost unneeded, though, but I guess it is needed if you're going to be that person that's like, oh, that's not canon. They can throw that in there and change
that
it.
That also goes to the idea of, like, these movie films as a business, though. Like, the movie industry as a money-making business. Because what you see here is they're exploiting what they know we like. Look at how many Indiana Jones there are. Look at how many Star Wars there are going to be. Look at how many Iron Mans there are. Avengers. Like, they like, we hit the winning message right here. You know what I mean? So we're going to keep doing it until we've milked all the money we can out of it.
And it's going to be hard to, but... I think I'm getting bored. It's like you see the same thing so many times, you're just going to get bored of it.
I'm not necessarily bored, but because of, like, the repetitiveness, I'm much less likely to go to the movie theater to see them.
Mm-hmm.
I can wait until they come on Netflix or they go on Amazon to rent for $3. I don't really need to see Spider-Man Homecoming because we've already had fucking, like, what,
yeah.
5 Spider-Man origin stories.
How many Uncle Ben death scenes do you need?
Yeah.
Like, try my rice.
That's the thing. They keep, like, restarting the origin stories, and it seems just, like, too soon.
The first Spider-Man series did it right up until the fucking third one. They butchered the hell out of Venom. Venom was the one character I was, like, looking for.
Venom's one of my favorite villains, yeah.
Tom Hardy's going to be Venom, and which is so fucking... But Tom Hardy is one of the best actors, I would say, of our generation.
I would say the first two Spider-Mans were okay. What ruined that franchise for me was Tobey Maguire. Not a good cast.
He seems like anybody could beat him up, though. You know what I mean? He's, like, very...
But he always looks like a... fucking dork.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, Spider-Man's supposed to be a dork, but I feel like he's always supposed to be, like, a sarcastic dork.
Yeah.
And Tobey Maguire didn't really do a good job.
He's too passive and just...
Tobey Maguire looked like the kid that just spilled milk all over himself. Like, that was his whole character. Like, ooh.
Well, like, in the comics, the cartoon, even the video games, especially the video games, Spider-Man's the guy that's like... He's about to, like, get killed, then he's like, oh, like, don't slip on your own splooge, Venom, or, you know, just say, like, well,
like, sarcastic shit. Venom splooges in the comic books?
I don't know, like, his black...
Jerry jeans. Lewis as Venom.
Spiky! I mean, there's the whole explanation of Spider-Man being about a kid in puberty and his... His web is just a metaphor for his goop.
Just his batch is just coming out.
It's like, oh, I'm stronger and I'm getting little hairs and I got this stuff coming out of my arms. What's going on, Aunt May?
So, we were talking about X-Men earlier. I don't know why it bothered me so much, but how I liked in the show how they all had their own outfits. Wait.
Are you talking about, like, the 1990s cartoon?
Yeah.
Dude, I love... That cartoon was like a soap opera.
Yeah, I just fucking love
Professor X. Same era as Batman the Animated Series, X-Men... And then that's when, because X-Men Spider-Man played right before the Power Rangers. Yeah, and Spider-Man. And then they, like, tried to do, like, the Hulk and Iron Man. Nobody gave two shits about Iron Man or the Hulk.
So going off the nostalgia factor, they just released a new Power Rangers movie as well. Which, was terrible.
You watched
That's what
it?
I heard.
I did. I rented it for like $2 one night when I was like really bored. It was not good.
I was going to rent it too.
It's no brainer.
I feel like I feel like the problem with all these nostalgia movies and probably like the blockbuster movies in general right now are they're trying to be like hyper realistic. It's like they're look at Transformers. Like the Transformers didn't look anything like the cartoon or the 3D Transformers. Right. They tried to make them look like, what if like they were actual cars or something?
Why does Megatron like, have a dick?
Yeah, and it's like I feel like all these movies are appealing to like the that couldn't happen guy. Right. Like they're just like let's try to make Transformers so like that couldn't happen guy won't say that couldn't happen.
No, because that's bullshit, because it would be the opposite of that guy. Because how much fucking damage is happening in Transformers? And then
all of the films. There's so much damage.
Civilization still has to figure it out, like, okay, like let's just rebuild. Like,
yo, turn off your phone.
I would turn it down, but it would just make a bunch of
sense. It's okay. Tom's normally the like, what the fuck are you doing with your phone guy?
Yeah.
But I listen to like a podcast from the BBC.
And there's a phone going off.
They're the least professional. They're like, oh, sorry. Like, would you like coffee or tea? Like, literally, like, the coffee or tea guy comes in while they're doing the podcast.
Crumpets, please.
One lump or two. I don't know why my British guy's really creepy.
Yeah, that was
Excuse me, sir.
I have kind of a Cockney thing. Like,
it's,
that's
it's
my
really
go-to.
Alfred. It's what? Just Alfred.
English Canadians, fuck you. So pleasant all the time. Another thing with the modern blockbuster, which going off, I know we've kind of gone a while with this, but how so many of these characters have English accents and they're like in these other worlds and you're like, how the fuck did they develop this English accent?
What I've always noticed is if they travel to another world, they typically have English accents.
Right.
It's like to show us that they're alien or something. It's like, they traveled at least one ocean away.
I'm pretty sure we're at a football match right now.
Oh, these are the people across the Milky Way over here.
That's how the second Guardians of the Galaxy was, because like those gold people,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure they were all English.
Yeah, they all had British accents. Oh, one of the things that I wanted to talk about is when we were talking about like the speed of shots and everything else like that. When I was in Dr. Daly's class, we were having a discussion about how movies went from being so slow and kind of like fewer shots and longer shots. And he was talking about the idea that back then our brains hadn't been trained since we were children to understand a rapid influx of images. So as film evolved and as people became accustomed to it, we were more able to understand and comprehend these really quick flashes of images.
I'm not. I'm still not able to.
Well, you're just slow.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think I don't think I'm slow, but I think it's just like I'm not able. Nobody can. All these fucking quick shots that really like they spend millions of dollars on like perfecting like one scene, which people are, it's gonna be up there for like 2 seconds. It really doesn't matter. I grew up on fucking John Ford like landscapes, just like my favorite is going back to Scorsese, even Tarantino, just like building the scene. This like. There was a film I saw back in, like, when I was, like, taking film classes. It was called Public Enemy, and James Cagney was the star. But there's a scene when, basically what happens was they killed his brother, so he's going into this bar to shoot up all these gangsters.
Spoilers.
1936, one of the best movies, no. But he goes in the bar, and all you see is, like, the lights of the bar, you see the shadows, and then you see the light emitting from his Tommy gun. And I think that's one of the coolest scenes I've ever witnessed, because they did more with less. Now they're doing more and they're getting less out of it.
Well, because older films too really bent themselves on the writing and the dialogue. It was about like coordinating literary devices like imagery, illusion, and stuff into a visual realm. So if we take Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, We have a black and white film. We have intensity of whites and blacks. We have a prevalence of nature being reflected through some sort. Like, the wallpaper in her hotel room is covered in nature scenes, but you usually only typically see it through a mirror. You have, like, the white car at the end sinking into the bog. So what you have there is, like, them trying to instill in the viewer this greater sense of good versus evil, our white hat versus black hat in our cowboy films. And now, instead of trying to subliminally bring us to this, you know, end result, they just tell us,
well,
I'm the bad guy. Yeah. Hey.
Even then, though, they I think they understood that they didn't have the resources that we have today. Like, they had to write a good story, you know. Yeah. Like, there's a scene in Fight Club where David Fincher, I believe it's for a, like, it's just a quick flash, but inserted a scene of hardcore porn into the movie Fight Club.
Yeah, they were playing off like the old subliminal images, because in, like, you know, like movies in the 60s, they would flash like split second Coca-Cola or popcorn to try to get you to buy that stuff.
Yeah, and Brad Pitt appears like in flashes throughout that film like 8 or 12 times. Mm-hmm. One of them, I think he's like completely naked.
And that's why after you watch it, you just want to suck his dick.
Yeah.
That's the subliminal message.
And that wasn't just me, was it?
Sequel to Fight Club, fellatio, Mr. Pitt.
It was a good 2.5 hours, just fellatio.
I just watched Fight Club. I am now for gay rights. Brad Pitt, come over to my house. The bigger the bonus, the better, okay?
Yeah, I feel like those old movies were trying to... like, the first movies... All they really had to base off of was theater. So they were using like a lot of like theater tropes. Yeah. And then they started to realize, like, well, what can we do that theater can't? And, you know, that's like the...
That's when the colors... The mastery of film started happening, because they found out how to do all these kind of just crazy technical things, like with editing, with shots. And it's interesting because there's this like 8-hour movie on Netflix, and I watched sadly like 4 hours of it. But it's like this French guy, a Scottish dude narrating like the birth of film up until like the present time. But he's like such a pretentious Scottish fucker. I just want to like go and like.
I think I watched a lot of that.
He's like, now if it's gonna my accent's gonna be a French guy, but
now if you watch this scene, he climbs the ladder. You see the fire, and then it pans back to the stressed woman. But it
you're
pans.
Doing a really good job.
Right. I did no, watch but that's that show. But that's how we go. Like, and I'm just like, this guy is a pretentious fuck. But they did so much. Even like, I feel like silent films were almost the originators of figuring out how to. Well, obviously, because that's
convey
what
it's messages.
George, right, George Eastman. Everyone in Rochester loves George Eastman. Because
he killed himself.
Because he killed himself. And we all want to kill ourselves in Rochester, so we love the guy.
I just had a garbage play.
He was the originator of the Kodak camera. But he, where he wasn't
and
very
first
business...
dick pic.
The first dick pic? Really?
He had to sit there for a half an hour just focused on his
penis. How did he stay hard?
I swear
long?
The camera loses 10 inches.
Gotta make sure my dick doesn't stop smiling. For the last
Mom, get in the other room. Kill myself soon.
He was a mama's boy. That's kind of why he killed himself. His mother died and it threw him off. But so like the two business moves he sucked at were somebody told him like, hey, George Eastman. there's this new thing called talkie movies you might want to invest in. And he was like, talkie movies? People go to the movies to relax. They don't want to hear all the sound going on while their movie's playing. No, they just want to hear the honky-tonk piano. That's why they go to the movies. Fuck you. You're stupid. And then, of course, talkie movies caught on. George Eastman didn't get any money from that. And then someone else came to him a decade later and was like, hey, man, this color film is catching on. Fuck that. No one wants to see color film. Black and white is going to stick, I tell you what.
And then, sadly, after he was dead, years later...
This is just a story.
They invent the digital fucking camera, and they're like, this isn't going anywhere. Let's focus so on film.
Yeah, so George Eastman legacy carried on to the 90s.
Yeah, it was the guy's like, what would George Eastman do? He would say no.
He would say, no, digital film. Everyone likes to... have a relationship with their developer. They don't like to skip the developing stage of their film.
Everybody likes going to that shack or a random parking lot, handing a guy high on weed your photos and having him develop them.
You and the missus went on a vacation this year, huh?
And stop looking at my pictures.
I mean, we should probably wind it down to like last things, but as you mentioned, like the pretentious type film, but like, do we want to see some more like pretentious stuff come back to film? Because I mean, I kind of would love to see some French guy smoking a cigarette by a windowsill. I don't know about that sounds up my alley.
Love me some lesbian art house stuff.
So I don't know. Do we want to see some more like artsy movies come out, or are they already there? I don't know.
From my perspective, I think the blockbusters are okay for pure entertainment. If you feel like getting down and gritty with a movie, those movies do exist. You have to look for them, though, and you have to kind of do your own research to find them. I often, however, do stumble across very great independent films that are story-driven and most people just won't have seen.
I'll end it on this, that... film studios should understand their audience. Most of them are intelligent. That they should understand that you are working with a dying medium and you need to do something that's going to bring back the audience. And sadly, what you're doing right now, I think, is just increasing the speed of the decay of the movie studio, the motion pictures.
Okay.
I just want to say one last thing. Boobs.
Despacito.
Despacito, I want to see your boobies bouncing in the sunset.
I feel like that's what they actually say.
If you translate it, yeah.
Oh, I got Bieber fever.
All right, so I'm not going to do as good of a job as Tom does as in the outro, but thank you for listening to Keeping It 1492. You can find us on
Instagram,
iTunes,
Twitter, Facebook.
Not all of those, but eventually.
I think we're on all of them.
Instagram, too?
No, sorry, those are just my dick pics.
If you want to see some dick
pics...
The
first one of which is George Eastman.
George Eastman.
The first dick pic ever. George Eastman's 1.5 inches.
And then I have the first Minecraft dick pic. It's really hard to see, but...
It's pixelated.
Right.
Find us on the YouTubes, the iTunes, the our own website, keepingit1492.com. Thank you for listening. We would be nowheres without yous.
Thanks, Howard Cosell.
Thank you for our fans in Ghana and Australia and Japan. I don't know why you're listening, but thank you. Thank you any place other than America. And... places in America, too. We thank you. If you're in Hurricane Harvey...
keep strong.
Keep strong. This is enough aid for you, though. We're giving you the aid of podcasts.
Entertainment.
Which is some entertainment, some psychological aid. You're welcome.
And we will donate all of our advertising money this week to Hurricane Harvey.
Oh, 25 cents. Big spenders.
Actually, we have none, so I'm sorry.
So, Wegmans, you're on the fucking hook. If you don't give us advertising money, Hurricane Harvey gets nothing.
Come on, Danny.
Eagle, call us out.